I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. Dave Allen is my co-host today, and we are going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Monday, April 26, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody. And I have a feeling it's August 26th.
What did I say it was?
Not April. I mean, I think you're in a spring hopes eternal
kind of mood. No, I was just looking at an article that I had pulled up, and
from
it
April.
Had April. Pardon?
From April.
I pulled up I was reading a news thing that it was dated April, and when I was given that, anyway, that's how I explain that, and that's the truth. So sometimes, you know, your mind is doing something else, but you see it and you say it. And
absolutely.
Boy, I'm going to move on from that one. It's Monday, August 26, 2019. People are out there thinking, oh no, what's going on? She's pulling a Joe Biden. BNN, where was he? He was in New Hampshire and saying how great it was to be in Vermont. Anyway, poor fellow. Anyway, let's look at the gold prices today. We're going to talk a little bit about gold. We had earlier in the day, we had gold, the spot market, to surpass $1,550 for the first time in more than 6 years today. And so, you know, it's all looking and blaming the U.S.-China trade dispute. But I have a feeling it's a little more than that, ladies and gentlemen. But let's go ahead and look at these numbers. You have gold currently now in the New York spot price. Actually, the New York spot price aftermarket. This is different than the actual spot market. It's different than the futures market. This trades electronically when markets close. This travels, I think it closes at 5 o'clock. So the typical spot market actually closes at 1:30. So we give the New York spot price as it is currently trading. Gold is up 180 at 1529. Silver was up 25 cents today at 1775. Platinum was down a dollar at 860. Palladium was up 21 at 1487. The USDX today was stronger, 0.41 at 98.06. Crude oil is down 41 at 53.76. And the paper markets today, let's get to those numbers. And of course, there was big days in the market. The Dow closed up 269 points. 25,898. You have the NASDAQ up 101 at 78.53. S&P was up 31 at 28.78. 10-year yield 1.54%. European Asian markets were, you know, fairly quiet overnight. You know, it's just not. It's a typical Monday, and I think everyone is catching their breath from you know, all the reporting from the G7 meeting out of France, and you know, all the discussions on the trade, and we're going to be talking about that. And yeah, you know, we'll tell you why the stock market's up almost 300 points today. But let's get back to gold first, Dave, where we see again, as I mentioned, gold jumped more than 1%. Spot gold was up 0.45% at $1,533 per ounce after hitting its highest since April of 2013. That's where I saw the April, Dave.
There you go.
That's where I saw the April. I knew I had a reason. And so this is all about the trade tensions and the related risk of global shutdown or even a global recession. Now, this is coming from an analyst from Carsten Menke. He says this is what's driving investors to these safe havens. He says there's no doubt in markets that these trade talks, so benefit of doubt or the leap of faith is not provided by financial markets anymore when it comes to the trade topic. And this is all going to be very supportive for gold. And of course, we know what's really supportive for gold is a fiat dollar. This is where we're heading. This isn't going to change anywhere. So the fiat dollar is the true engine of what we're experiencing in these financial markets. And, you know, the trade agreements, the, you know, the global recession, these are all symptoms of that fiat dollar. But We don't know what the going. I don't know if it's the first domino, the last domino, or well, it wouldn't be the last domino, but the first or second domino that begins. We had President Trump said China is ready to come back to the negotiating table, following a couple of phone calls yesterday, Sunday, and of course, you know, the market reacted as it has in the past day.
Yeah, stocks jumped. You know, almost up 1% early in today's trading. Youssef Abbasi of FC Stone said there's a little sense of optimism. this is him at 8:30 this morning Eastern time, talking about optimism that the U.S. and China could restart talks. But at the same time, he continued, you also have some hesitation. But perhaps more importantly, he noted that trading volumes were lower than usual. And as listeners know, lower volumes can sometimes lead to volatile moves in the market. So we expect some more volatility in the coming days until there's some more clarity about, trade and how that's going to evolve on a number of fronts. You know, Melody had mentioned that speaking to reporters at the G7 meeting, our president had said that us and China were getting ready to talk very seriously, and that perhaps limited gold's further advance today after Washington announced an additional 5% duty on over $500 billion in targeted Chinese goods. Of course, we know that a few hours after that, China, you know, unveiled their retaliation with tariffs on $75 billion worth of U.S. products.
And we saw the European markets, they recovered slightly following this report that there might be some close to a deal, or that at least the phone lines are going to be opening up between China and the United States. Jerome Powell on Friday, as a recap, said that the Fed will act as appropriate to keep the economy healthy, although he did stop short of committing to rapid-fire rate cuts. So we saw silver jump 1.5% today to $17.77 an ounce earlier in the day. And, of course, this is the highest since September of 2016, Dave.
Well, as Melody alluded just a minute ago, President Trump said at the G summit today that China is sincere about wanting to make a trade deal with the U.S. The president, speaking alongside of French President Emmanuel Macron, said at a joint press conference that you know, he thinks Beijing wants to make a deal very badly. I'm not sure they have a choice, he said, but to deal with the U.S., whether they want to or not. I think we're going to have a deal, he added. Now, in Beijing, Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhen Shuang said he was not aware that a phone call between the two sides had taken place. And Hu Jin, editor-in-chief of the Chinese state-run newspaper The Global Times, denied that negotiators had held the phone calls that President Trump described. Hu said China didn't change its position. China won't cave to U.S. pressure. You know, Hu's widely seen as a mouthpiece for a lot of Beijing's messaging.
We know the Global Times is a tabloid under the People's Daily, which is the official newspaper of the Communist Party of China. And Hu has been followed by many Wall Streeters and investors for some sort of insight on this trade war. And the latest trade moves by both countries were the latest punches in this escalating trade war. And, of course, we've seen what has happened to the how it has spooked investors and, you know, the global economy. I still, Dave, don't think it's just this trade war that is making the world, you know, recessions creeping into all of these countries. I just think, you know, again, these economies were built on stimulus. They're running out of stimulus. It doesn't have the same impact as it had. And you know, these, you know, you can blame the trade wars if you want, and it might have had some impact, but it's not the only impact.
And, no, I agree. I think it just so happens that there's so much news about the trade war, especially in the mainstream media, that I think it, you know, with whatever is being said, it's moving gold, other precious metals, and the paper markets You know, I think it more than a lot of other things are contributing to day-to-day volatility. Clearly, if we add in just almost the countless economic factors, not even, you know, geopolitical, which are certainly contributory to the uncertainty out there in the country and the world, I think that just explains the frequency of these trade war stories. Because in fact, I mean, our president in particular just talks about them a lot. But that, now that since the G7, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, you know, there's some added issues with Japan and South Korea and the European Union and the UK. So anyway.
And you're absolutely correct, and I agree with you. And what better way to create the boogeyman is the trade wars. That's the boogeyman. But but anyway, L. Arian said that the best we can hope for is not even a truce; it's a ceasefire. And so we'll see what happens.
Yes, we will.
What about those American companies? Are they going? There's American companies are not going to come back to the United States on just a request by the president. But there's been a lot of writings and notations about perhaps calling this as another national emergency.
Yeah, you know, if it were only a request, you actually might have more companies, at least privately, following up with the discussions with the government officials. But this has come in the form of a presidential edict, almost claiming certain powers, obscure powers under a 1977 law that Trump claims gives him the authority to order companies out of China or presumably any other country. But L. Arian, who's a chief economist with the firm Alliance, says that, you know, most of these companies are, you know, they're going to wait out the trade war, although he says they're starting to diversify their supply chains. For example, as we know, you know, those who are still in China who relied mainly on China as their source of income, you know, are looking at other places. Vietnam has been talked about a lot in the last few months, and but you know, it's these U.S. concerns about China's unfair trade and business practices that go beyond economics to toward national security that, you know, it's resulted in in large part about how we're handling the Chinese telecom giant Huawei and U.S. businesses that do business with that company, you know, literally blacklisting the company. And although, let's see, the U.S. did extend the Huawei ban for an additional 90 days.
Well, you know, the housing prices in July, the median price of a new single-family home fell 4.5% from July of last year to 312, and it was down 3.1% from July of 2017. This is all coming from the Commerce Department, and, you know, I don't know. It just baffles me that the median house is still over $300,000. It's just like,
I know.
You know, I mean, how do people, I don't get it, you know. It baffles me that even the real estate market is doing as well as it has based on that. When we haven't had wages rise significantly, I mean, they're barely up a little bit, and that's all due to inflation. But yeah, it really does amaze me that they're as high as they are. And, But they're
coming down, and I think that's the main point, you know, to take from this in the context of, you know, a housing bubble, if you will.
True. And, you know, and the sad thing is if that comes down, then the people are going to be upside down in their homes because they're all buying at these higher levels, just like we see in any bubble. And real estate always has its bubbles. And so if that comes down and, you know, maybe people want to get out in a couple of years, they're going to be upside down and they're not going to be able, you know, it's the same story. We don't learn from anything. we just continue to go through it and hope for the best. But, anything else you'd like to add to that, Dave?
No. I mean, you know, home builders, you know that, you know, when sales start falling, it's time to cut prices and add incentives and see what happens. Now, sales have been falling for over 2 years now. And, you know, we are seeing more and more reports of, you know, discounts on decks, on finished basements, and on other free upgrades, if you will. Yet, you know, inventory of new houses are rising. And, you know, the one stat that I'll leave you with is this new inventory of new houses for sale provided over 6 months of supply at the current rate of sales, and that's the same level as in June 2006 at the beginning of the housing bust just before the Great Recession.
But it's different this time, Dave, right?
Oh, it is there. It's not as deep, and the investment of housing loans isn't quite as greatly leveraged into derivatives as they had been over 10 years ago. But the reports coming out of you know, Wall Street particularly show that, you know, those housing related derivatives, collateralized debt obligations, are on the rise and have been for some time. And that's a huge concern. You know, later on in the program, if we have time, we'll talk about part of a newsletter article that I wrote that talks about, you know, lessons learned from the Great Recession. And this, in part, is one of those that I'm not sure we've learned much. Hmm. Or perhaps it's just that we're just so arrogant, perhaps, an arrogant seeking, you know, additional short-term profits.
Well,
that,
nope,
you know,
nobody
do
wants
it
to,
despite
nobody wants to learn from history anymore. They just want to rewrite it. We can't learn from our mistakes. We're heading into a break right now, ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Sign up for a weekly newsletter. I saw this article, too. I think this actually came out of the Jackson Hole meeting this week, the last week.
Yeah.
From
which one is that?
Carney. I was talking
about, oh, yeah.
You know, where, and I don't find it interesting what he talked about. He talked about for a global digital currency. That's not the part that surprised me, because I don't, you know, they're not, basically it's already digital for them. But what I find it interesting is the part that it, his comments in relationship to the dollar being the reserve currency. They don't want the dollar to be the reserve currency anymore. Right, Dave?
Well, this is true. Now, you know, that's you know, digital currency backed by the G7 is needed to compete with the U.S. dollar, according to Bank of England Governor Mark Carney. And as Melody indicated, he said that in a speech he gave to central bankers in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, at the Kansas City Fed's annual economic policy symposium last Friday. He said, you know, the dollar has reached a level of dominance that poses a barrier to economic growth in much of the world. He said, if the share of trade invoiced in synthetic hegemonic currency were to rise, I have to follow up on that, shocks in the U.S. would have less potent spillovers through exchange rates, and trade would become less synchronized across countries. So he, you know, he says, you know, that reducing the influence of the dollar in the global financial cycle would help reduce the volatility of capital flows, especially to emerging market economies. Now, according to Carney, the dollar's influence on global financial conditions could similarly decline if a financial architecture developed around a new digital currency that displaced the dollar's dominance in global credit markets. Interesting comments, Melody, to a group that I would bet had, you know, had more receptiveness to that idea, you know, than was probably hoped for by, say, our Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin.
And again, I think the importance there is the dollar's dominance. That's what they want to eliminate. And I don't think they could do it by a digital currency, because it, to me, it wouldn't really eliminate any of the, you know, any of the you know, the volatility. Because basically, you have the same thing. It's all digits anyway now. So because it's all
fiat.
So, well, it's backed by
oil.
Oil's
the big one there.
Yeah, it's backed by oil. But that's, you know, so are they saying? So anyway, it's a topic that's going to become more and more. What other meeting did they have a couple of weeks ago that we talked about where their main focus was going to be on a new monetary system that we had talked about here on this program? So, and this was the second time that they're talking about a new monetary system, and that's what it's all about. And because these countries can't do it anymore, they're tapped, and so they know what's coming. That's the whole point. They know what's coming, and they know that they have to create a new system or to bring in a new currency or open that basket of currencies and throw some gold in there. But then, too, they
gold
all know.
Is coming.
Yeah, but they also know that, you know, they know these central banks don't have the amount of gold that they are saying is carrying on the books because they leased it and released it without, you know, but hey, that's another story. That's another day. And, of course, this is always interesting, too. France had wanted to put on digital tax. And President Trump said this morning that the U.S. is close to reaching a compromise. President Trump's comments came as he spoke to reporters at the G7 meeting alongside the German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Merkel said, meanwhile, she said that the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development Nations wants a solution to digital taxation by 2020. And as a, you know, just to refresh your memories, ladies and gentlemen, France had passed a 3% tax in July that targets around 30 big tech companies. And yes, it includes the Facebook, the Amazon, and Google. It applies to organizations with annual revenues of more than 750 million euros, which would be about 183 million arising from so-called digital activities. So there's been tensions over this tax between the rising between the two nations. And President Trump said, claiming that the levy targets great American companies and threatening to impose tariffs on French goods in retaliation. Dave.
Well, specifically, Melody, he said if they, France, does that, we'll be taxing their wine like they've never seen before. And all I can say on behalf of my wife and well-rounded vino fans, oh no! Please don't! Although France pushed forward with its own domestic tax on digital companies, an EU-wide effort failed last year. However, EU Chief Donald Tusk also said at the G7 over the weekend that the EU would respond in kind if France were targeted by the U.S. in response to its digital tax. On Friday, reports claimed that EU officials were planning to launch a sovereign wealth fund worth $110 billion to invest in European companies. According to those reports, the proposal would be designed to help European firms catch up with competitors from particularly the U.S. and China, with the draft explicitly naming a slew of tech giants, again, such as Amazon, Apple, Google, Tencent, as threats.
Well, my question is, but I guess it's the same thing as what we're doing with the tariffs. I mean, here we're going to battle for companies like Amazon, Apple, and Tencent. They're the wealthiest, well, I don't know about Tencent, but at least Apple, Amazon, they're the wealthiest corporations in the world. And our country is going to battle for them. And I don't know. I don't know if, is that something new or is it just?
No, it's not. And I don't know if it's a matter of the U.S. wanting to deal with big tech on its own terms, particularly, you know, before France does, or even in concert with them, or if it's more an ideological issue. I don't know if there's being, you know, I mean, I think it's less than what I was about ready to say, just hearing, getting political pressure from, you know, the libertarian right, who has, you know, railed for years about, you know, the taxation or wanting to keep the internet as tax and fee free as possible. Now, you know, particularly with Amazon having, you know, begun to dominate certain levels of retail sales on the internet. You know, the internet's already heavy with sales tax, for example, in states where it's applicable. So it's probably isn't that angle, but I just the other angle that I mentioned, just I don't know that it it makes sense, because it looks as though because Trump has railed against big tech to some extent.
But now he's going up there and fighting for them. But you know what? Wasn't that long ago that you had the Apple visiting the White House?
Right.
And, you know, with those comments. So, you know, to me, it's not the only corporation that's done that. We've seen Buffett go to the White House. I mean, you know, previous administrations and, you know, all of these big multinational corporations have, you know, revolving doors, you know, going into the White House. And I've always found that distasteful. You know, they're not supposed to fight for multinational corporations. They're supposed to protect us citizens.
Indeed.
You know, I just have issues, you know, and asking them to come. They're not coming back. They're not going to come back. They'll never come back under these same circumstances with just a few little tariffs going on and going here and going there. And it's not going to trickle down. And, well, I'm going to trickle into our next article or our next comment. Since we're talking about the G7, it's Monday. I was just going to keep it nice, relaxed, and you guys don't want me to get fired up today. I mean, when you start off a program with the wrong month, I mean, come on. So we're going to talk about what was interesting is at the G7 meeting with today, President Trump said that he would be open to meeting with President Rouhani of Iran. He also said he'd be willing to support short-term loans to get through Tehran through its current financial difficulties if talks open. Now, I'm not a fan of that. Why would we want to loan them money? I don't get it. But Trump was responding to an overture by President Macron of France, who said that he would try to set up such a meeting in the next few weeks to seek a resolution of decades of conflict between the two countries. Macron said he had spoken with Mr. Rouhani and said that if American and Iranian presidents met, his conviction was that an agreement can be met. Well, didn't the Japanese Abe, didn't he go to Iran trying to smooth the waters? And it didn't work so well either. It wasn't that long. It wasn't that long ago that Abe went to Iran to smooth the waters, and something happened the day after, I believe, or while he was still in Iran, something had happened. I wasn't sure if that was the time they shot down the drones, or something had happened. But so, you know,
yeah,
fingers crossed for
Macron. I forget exactly.
But so
well, you know, our president said he wasn't seeking regime change, but if Iran infringed on American national interests, they're going to be met with really violent force. Trump has repeatedly castigated former President Barack Obama for the 2015 nuclear deal that unfroze billions of dollars in cash belonging to Iran, and has imposed sanctions that have seriously damaged the Iranian economy. But he said today that he'd go along with a short-term line of credit or loan to Iran, something that was secured by oil. But he added that it would be from numerous countries, not just the U.S.
Well, you know, secured by oil, does that mean he'd have to sell it? He would have to sell his oil in dollars instead of what he's doing? I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Which they're not going to do. I can't imagine that they would. But of course, this would a meeting between American and Iranian leaders would be the first since the U.S. embassy was stormed and American diplomats were taken hostage in 1979. Sure, we had President Obama talked by Rouhani by telephone in 2013, but the Iranian leader, under pressure from hardliners in this country, has refused to meet in person. So Macron's bid to bring the two leaders together came a day after he invited the foreign minister, Mohammad Zarif, of Iran to the G7 for a surprise last-minute visit. And Zarif held talks with French, German, and British officials, but Trump declined to see him. Something else going on at the G7 meeting, Dave? The Amazon rainforest?
Yeah, the group of seven apparently agreed on a $20 million aid package to help Brazil and its neighbors fight the fires that are raging in the Amazon rainforest. Again, a venture announced by French President Macron. Macron and President Sebastian Piñera of Chile said they'd also reached an agreement in principle with the countries of the Amazon basin for a long-term program of forest protection and reforestation of cleared lands. And they said that more details might be presented next month to the UN General Assembly. Now, these announcements followed a G7 session on climate that included representatives of several countries that aren't members of the group of seven, Melody.
Well, you know, I started reading a little bit about that, and they said that the Amazon produces about 20% of the Earth's oxygen.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if there's other places that produce more than that, or if it's, you know, or if that's the, you know, it didn't say whether that was the, but I thought that's an awful lot.
Yeah. That's what makes it such a profoundly important part of the world. You know, in terms of preserving and you know a healthier, healthier air for one thing. So
well, yeah.
I mean, it's certainly to the extent that the Amazon is burning. There's some pretty scary photographs from probably the International Space Station, unless it was from a satellite, that showed. Fairly substantial ring of fire along, you know, probably two-thirds to three-quarters of the border of the rainforest there. So the, it sounds like Bolsonaro needs all the help that that he can get.
Yeah. Another interesting thing that came out of the, and we're heading into a break right here, so we'll try to touch, finish this up real quick. Prime Minister Modi of India, he declined President Trump's offer to mediate the escalating dispute with Pakistan over the territory of Kashmir, saying that he did not want to involve any other country in the matter. These issues are bilateral, and he did sit with President Trump on the sidelines of the G7 meeting. And we'll have to see how this is going to end. What's going to end is this segment of the program. And we'll be right back right after these few short commercials.
Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 800-375-4188. We're ending out the month is almost over. We're heading into September. Next week is Labor Day. Monday will be closed for the holiday. I'm not sure if we'll postpone the newsletter or not. Maybe we'll just send you something out, something very brief. We'll be back on Tuesday. And so what a summer it has been with the gold prices rising. It certainly was not a summer doldrums for summer prices. And we're going to talk about silver prices here in just a little bit. And we're just going to finish up on the G7 meeting. I find it fascinating to see what these leaders do, how they look and their little comments and so forth. And, you know, it's just kind of, I always have to chuckle at some of these, but I think all eyes for England was on Boris Johnson, as this was his first meeting of the sort at the G7. And
he certainly needed to capitalize on his friendship with President Trump, but at the same time, you know, show that he's not the president's pet. And certainly wanted to avoid falling out with Europe's most important leaders at the same time. You know, yesterday at the G7, he just about walked that diplomatic tightrope, even if he got little in the way of reassuring signals and offered even fewer about how Britain is going to confront its imminent challenge, Brexit. You know, the summit marked the arrival in the global stage for Johnson, who's promised to withdraw the UK from the European Union by the October 31st deadline, with or without an agreement. Now, in a meeting with Trump, which was their first face-to-face meeting since Boris became prime minister last month, the president praised Johnson as the right man to deliver Brexit, a project both leaders favor. Johnson also promised Trump also promised a very big trade deal with the U.S. once Britain had left the EU.
But what
interesting development.
What happens if he leaves the Union with or without? I mean, without an agreement. I mean,
There are so many provisions that were negotiated by Theresa May and the EU, primarily about trade, but also about unrestricted travel. There's, you know, that Northern Ireland backstop about, you know, concerns over, you know, ending what had been, you know, a key part of the end you know, the sectarian violence in Ireland between you know, Northern Ireland and the UK,
but what does it revert back to? I mean, this is something Theresa May never said.
And
she never said, "Hey,
no,
deadline. If we don't have an agreement," and
she did, though. She did.
She did say that?
It's a common misconception. I mean, it was clear. I mean, she said, you know, hey, if we leave without an agreement, you know, all chaos, you know, chaos reigns. The UK will go into November without any official, you know, trade and travel understandings with the rest of you know, Europe, for example.
But she said if we leave. Boris is saying we're leaving whether we got it or not. Two different ways to take that, to which means he's serious and they'll have a deal. But if it's kind of like, and maybe she just wasn't able to pull this done, and that's the difference. If we leave versus, hey, we're going to leave whether we got it or not.
Well, that's right. I mean, she was after a deal.
Notice, huh?
She was after a deal that she couldn't get enough of votes in Parliament for.
Yeah, she
and they rejected her at least twice. The EU made it clear that they weren't going to renegotiate. So Boris here, you know, Johnson's position is, hey, we're leaving. I mean, May was supportive in the end of Brexit, you know, publicly. She just wanted to leave with an agreement. So the chaos that is likely to ensue, at least in the short term, if there's no agreement, you know, would be warded off. But Johnson is, you know, it looks like he's, a little more of a disruptor. And
I don't look at it that way. I mean, if you have a bunch of politicians and they aren't making decisions and they're just stroking them,
but there's the thing.
Just stroking.
I think.
But and you're trying to make an agreement, and they're not going to, and they know you're not gonna. If they know you're not going to exit without an agreement, they're just gonna, you know, pass the, you know, stretch it out as long as they can. But you got somebody in there that's not trying to be disruptive. He's just saying, hey, we're done. So you come up with an agreement by October 1st, or yeah, I am going to leave. So, you know, it's he really is drawing the line in the sand.
No, they're leaving regardless. It's
yeah.
It's not a matter. They're leaving. He just doesn't care. Ostensibly, if there's an agreement, and I think the UK is asking for a whole lot of trouble. Problem is, you know, his own party is not behind what's been negotiated. And the EU continues to say, even under new leadership, that we ain't renegotiating. It leaves everybody in a bit of a conundrum. It's just a matter, and particularly on the trade end, without an agreement, and leaving Brexit, you know, how much of a cost is it going to impose on UK businesses and consumers? And that's the big question mark. And the Northern Ireland factor isn't something to dismiss, because it's almost held sacred in some parts of Parliament in the country, and I know no one wants to revisit, you know, the times when, you know, they had to pass through military checkpoints to get from, you know, one country to the other. That could bring back a lot of age-old resentment.
Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about silver. We have silver prices are doing very well. But it seems like the mining supplies are beginning to fall significantly. Dave?
Well, you know, as silver prices continue to rise, and they're now well into the $17 area, you know, supply from three of the top producing countries has fallen significantly this year. You know, Peru, Chile, and Mexico all reported declines in silver mine supply in the first half of 2019, with Peru suffering the largest reported drop-off. Now, with these three countries accounting for 45% of total global silver production, a reduction in mine supply can obviously impact the overall market. You know, according to mine supply data reported by each country, Peru's silver production is down 10% the first half of the year, Chile's down 7%, and Mexico 4%. The total decline in silver production from these three countries alone in just the first half of the year is 12 million ounces. That's no chump change. Peru's silver mine supply for the first half of 2019 fell by 216 metric tons. Mexico about one half of that, and Chile 44 metric tons. Melody. Wow.
Well, you know, the rankings of the top 10 silver producing countries in the world in 2019, and this is according to World Silver Survey, Mexico is number one, 197 million ounces, Peru, two, three, China, number four is Russia, number five is Chile, six is Bolivia, seven is Poland, eight is Australia, nine, the USA. And, of course, Argentina then is number 10. So production is down and significantly, and, you know, it should all support the silver prices in addition to everything else that's coming our way. So this was interesting. The Democrats, there's a short-term funding bill. Are we already at that point, Dave? Has the year gone by so fast?
That, well, yeah, I mean, it's the end of the fiscal year in 36 yeah. days, yeah. 37 days. New one starts.
Yeah, well, Congress passed a bill earlier this month to raise the debt ceiling and set budget levels for 2 years. However, lawmakers still have to pass appropriations bills before current funding runs out at the end of September. And we know that the lawmakers are not going to return from their August recess until September 9th. You know, it only gives them a couple of weeks to get the government funded. And the White House, or I should say the House, has already passed 10 to 12 appropriations bills. The Senate has not passed any. And so, well, just another drama, just another day.
And yes, indeedy.
You know, it's the same story every year. They keep doing it. One of these days, they're not going to do it. And so anyway, it should keep this September kind of interesting. And there's another Fed, Kansas City Fed President Esther George said that, you know, they may be partly responsible for the yield curve inversion. He says, or she says that they think that the Fed still has a large balance sheet that could be putting some downward pressure on those longer term rates. And again, this is all from the Friday's symposium in Jackson Hole. And anything else interesting to add to that we don't already know?
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that the balance sheet, which now stands at about $3.8 trillion of treasuries and Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Federal Home Loan Bank Board backed securities ballooned as much as $4.5 trillion. As the Fed sought to stimulate the economy out of the 2008 financial crisis. George said, you know, all we know what the history is of inverted yield curves and the concern that they portend a recession coming. So, you know, interestingly, George, when she's saying the Fed may be responsible for the yield curve inversion, is admitting that when the recession hits, they're at least partly to blame. We already knew that, ladies and gentlemen, but very interesting coming from a member of the Federal Reserve Bank. And you know, I just found it very interesting, although she did say that she doesn't see negative rates for the U.S. right now. But reminds us that the U.S. already has zero interest rates, or close to it, when you take inflation into account. That is, you know, the nominal interest rate, say 2.25% for the Fed funds rate, minus inflation of 2%, leaving the real, you know, interest rate at about 0.25%, give or take some, to the extent that actual inflation is greater, if not much greater than 2%, then, you know, we're already in negative interest rate land. So she says, so policy isn't tight right now, in my view, and in the U.S., and I think if the economy grows, I don't see a scenario for that. So that I found that comment in particular to be interesting. George, by the way, was one of the two FOMC members that voted against the 25 basis point cut at the end of July.
Well, you know, we're running out of time. We didn't get to the depression article, but the ladies and gentlemen can go to our website, dgscoins.com, and sign up for it. Sign up for the weekly newsletter, and you can get that. It hasn't gone out. It'll probably go out later this evening. So you can do that. Well, we can talk a little bit about it on Wednesday. And it's an interesting article, and it's just a refresher. I don't know if it's not a refresher course, but it brings us back to those days, because we all forgot about 2008. We all have short, well, we don't, but Americans have short memories, and I guess the world has short memories.
There are clearly two sides to this from a historical perspective that. We write about, you know, the bailouts weren't about saving capitalism or our economy, ladies and gentlemen. The deal that the bankers cooked up was to save the banks
from
capitalism.
Absolutely. We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Dave. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye. That's too bad.